Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Welcome to Real Recovery. That worked for me. George and Bill here. I'm George, he's Bill.
See, this is a show. Brand new introduction.
No, it's great. And believe it or not, anybody can have a radio show because we have one, you know?
Yeah. Bill Arnold on this side of the room, and just across the chicken wire fence is George Fraser, a man who overcame his sweating problem and regained his confidence.
I never had a sweating problem.
Really?
Yeah, I never confidence. I'm so deluded, I actually think I am somebody. I am.
Yeah. George, we're going to talk tonight about the opioid epidemic a little bit and some of the problems associated with it. Of course, drug overdose deaths continue to increase in the U.S. and in Canada, because our guest tonight is coming to us all the way from Winnipeg.
Cool.
So
I went to Winnipeg once.
Really?
I used to sell up there, yeah.
Sell what?
Candy.
Yeah.
Yep, bond sales in Winnipeg.
Okay.
Actually, even colder there than here. And I was thinking, why would you live? I can't say that. It's a nice community.
It's a lovely community, yeah. We have a lot of listeners in Winnipeg, George. You got to be nice to the people there.
We did.
Yeah. No, we still do, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Stay inside.
All right. George, get a hold of yourself.
Sorry.
All right. Let's talk about step one tonight because, you know, on Road Recovery, every week we do want to talk about one of the steps.
We do.
Because we consider those to be like calisthenics.
We do, actually.
It's how you stay in shape, and that's how you work your recovery well, and they're all based in Scripture. And not a lot of people know that, so it's always good to be reminding ourselves of that, George.
Well, that's why we do them, and there's nothing magical in knowing them. You have to do them. That was pretty profound, huh?
And I'm writing that down.
We admitted we were powerless over drugs and alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, step one. Talking about the opioid crisis, when I had a real job and was counseling people, I had a lot of opioid addicts, guys that had been businessmen that might have 10 years of sobriety, Bill, and they'd go get an operation. And then the next thing you know, they're buying heroin on the street. And how that progresses is you get Vicodin or Oxy or something like that, and your prescription runs out and you're hooked. The only place to get it, since they've tightened down on the prescriptions, you know, you can't doctor shop anymore thanks to the computers, you go out on the street and buy heroin. And then you wind up either dead or on the street or in treatment. And there were guys that, you know, had recovery before, business guys, guys that had great jobs. It'll get you. And it's always a potential there because they light up the scoreboard. They get you out of pain, but they also put you into pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the withdrawal, the stop, is horrible. I've heard guys say it's like if you take a shower, it's like people hitting you with nails and pins. You're so sensitive, and they don't want to go through that, so they keep using. It's terrible.
So when you talk about people who have recovered from opioid, when you go back and you go out on the street and you try to get some, you don't really know what you're getting.
Oh, absolutely.
It could be laced with fentanyl and you could be instantly dead.
Right.
So in other words.
Yeah. But at that time, you got to get your stuff. And right. That doesn't enter in. And there's a lot of people we worked with. I remember my friend Rodney from Detroit. You knew Rodney.
I did know Rodney.
And he had 3 years, and I came back from Arizona, and I went to his funeral. And I know he didn't intend to kill himself. And there's scores of people like that, people listening, you know, parents, kids. When I was growing up back in the 70s, if anybody can actually still be alive who's back there, you
Careful.
Know. Well, no, we're old. And
I get it.
But heroin was the last drug you used.
That was like the drug you heard about that people like at Woodstock took.
Yeah.
That was like the most hardcore, you would never even be around it anywhere.
Right. You don't
see it,
you don't
hear
do
about
heroin.
It.
That's the big one. And now,
you don't have to inject it. You can snort it, can't you?
You can smoke it.
Yeah.
Snort it.
And it's cheap.
I don't know.
I mean, from what I've heard, it's like you can get a hit of heroin for $10.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what somebody told me who I work with in recovery.
Okay.
What is why heroin? He goes, because it's cheap.
There you go.
Yeah. And you don't know what you're getting, and you don't know what you're
cheap.
Right. Well, it's expensive if it's expensive because it takes your life.
Right.
It steals, robs, and destroys. And so, no, it's the most expensive thing out there.
But the Son of Man comes to give life and give it to us abundantly. And so we go to recovery. And one of the things we look at, Bill, it's so sad of all the people that have died and people we've known. But God can still use that for his greater purpose. And I think we look at Romans 8:28, that all things work together for good for those who are following God and walking in his purpose. And tonight's story is no different. It's sad. It's gripping. But it has a very interesting, good end to it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully what you hear tonight doesn't happen to anybody you know or you. As a recovering addict, it's always on the table for me. And I see people go back that have a long-term sobriety who go in for an operation. And then they're back using again. And I have a great respect for the enemy.
Mm-hmm. The opioids, when you get them, make sure that you have a good discussion with your doctor in terms of how many you're going to get. I had a friend who had hip replacement surgery, and I said, what did you get on the way out of the hospital? And she said, I got Vicodin. I go, oh. I said, how many did you get? She said, I got it 80. I said, 80? How many did you use? She said, I think I used 3 or 4 total. So you got, what, another 76 laying around the house, 74 laying around the house? That's a lot of pills.
Yeah.
So that's very, very dangerous. I think the discussion should always be, can you provide pain medication for 2 or 3 days? And then if I need more, can we discuss plan B? I mean, you don't want to get hooked on that.
Yeah, I have great respect for the medical profession. My brother-in-law, Dr. Tom Blee, is a trauma surgeon, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the guy, but he's very smart. And all doctors are to get where they are. But you know what the deal is, Bill? They don't intend to turn anybody into addicts. We are responsible for using the medications responsibly. And, you know, I see a lot of people, I hear in the recovery community, pointing fingers at the doctors and the drug companies. Don't point them at the doctors. No way. If the lawsuits come out, you know, against the Oxy company that they knew it was more addictive than they said, okay. But the doctors are clean here. And we have to be aware that if they work for pain, they work for pleasure, too. Mm-hmm. And you got to keep your guard up.
Yeah, and if you have gotten through the phase of your operation or your procedure and you've got still got a big jar of them, in the back of your mind, are you thinking, hey, if I injure...
A big jar of them.
What?
As an addict, I go with that. I see a big jar. It's like, take it back to Walgreens or where you got it.
Or, yeah, find a place that you can dispose of it.
Can you take them to the police department?
I don't think you can, but I think you can take them to your...
pharmacy?
Maybe the pharmacy. I don't know.
Don't they have those waste bins there at the pharmacy?
I don't know,
where
George.
You dump syringes in? And...
I don't know. I don't know. You should know that.
Well, I should, but I don't.
But you should.
A lot of things I should know.
There's a lot of things you should know.
Probably things I should do I don't do, too. But let's get off me and back to the show.
All right. Well, we've got a great story coming up. A sad story, a difficult story, and one that will be challenging for us to listen to because whenever... You know, there's a loss of a life at a young age. It breaks hearts.
Yes.
So we will hear Aaron's story. Just after the break, you're listening to Real Recovery, Bill Arnold and George P. Fraser. I think the P stands for work in progress. What does it stand for?
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I just kind of added it to make it sound better.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. So thanks for listening. We'll take a short break and be right back.
so much space.
Welcome back to the show. So glad that we have a chance tonight to talk to Erin Miller. She's coming to us all the way from Winnipeg. And, George, that's a hockey town.
Absolutely. They got to sign their free agents, but they're in trouble.
I know. And we're hockey guys, so we're already excited to talk to Erin. Erin, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me on today. It's awesome.
Of course. Now, your story has got addiction all over it, and it's got quite a bit of sadness involved as well.
Yeah, it sure does. It has a lot of everything that we all have a really hard time talking about. Today, I feel honored, privileged, and blessed to be Chad Miller's mom, telling his story, rewriting the ending of his story. He died of a heroin drug overdose on November 30th, 2014, when he was off following his dreams, playing hockey in Chicago. So I got every parent's worst nightmare phone call on November 19th, 2014, from a Dr. Hall from Elmhurst Hospital asking if I was Chad Miller's mom. And, you know, our life was never the same since. So today I feel extremely blessed to be able to share his story, share my journey, and provide hope for other people that are listening to this. And, you know, really, I'm out to change the world one person at a time. So thank you guys for everything you're doing. And every time I talk about this, it doesn't get easier. So I always appreciate the audience that's listening to me that, you know, is opening up their heart and knowing that I'm coming from, you know, a really tough place every time I talk about it. So thank you.
Yeah, those first couple sentences, Erin, just brought tears to my eyes, because I can only imagine you being home that night and your phone ringing with the absolute most horrific news you could ever imagine.
Yeah, my parents had actually just got back from Chicago the day before and had watched Chad be playing hockey and had kind of got him his new room set up and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, getting that phone call was, you know, that I needed to get to Chicago as fast as I could and that they had put him on life support. And, you know, I from that minute on, you know, my phone just didn't stop ringing. Now, you know, you needed to do this and I needed permission to this. So, you know, my life of just being like, okay, what are we maybe going to have for supper tomorrow? Went from this complete chaos. And yeah, it's, like I said, it's every parent's worst nightmare. And when we were in Chicago, when he was on life support for the 11 days, you know, I come from a town of Portage la Prairie, Manitoba, 14,000 people. Yes, he, you know, had addiction issues and kind of dabbled in drugs as he was growing up, et cetera. Never in my wildest dreams would I think that he would die of something like this. You know, I didn't, you know, and so when I'm talking to the police in Chicago, I'm like, I don't understand how this can happen. And, you know, he says to me, for $5, this could be you. This is a complete epidemic. And I just really couldn't figure it out. And so, you know, we had lots of conversations with the healthcare professionals and the police and the spiritual care workers, which were a huge help to me along this 11-day journey. And we all prayed around Chad's bed as he was on life support. In fact, the room was pretty much full. And there were some key people that just held hands around his bed and said, he's taken a fall, and in 5 years from now, this would be killing his friends in Canada. And in 5 years from now, they're completely right. And they said, one day, Erin, you will be his voice. And here I am being his voice. I had a battle to get here myself. And like I said, everyone has a story. And so, yeah, 5 years later, this is killing his friends. You know, we're in a crisis situation in this country, in North America, in the world, actually, with a whole bunch of things that are wrong. And one of those things is drugs.
Can we back up here a little bit? I'd like to hear about your son and how, you know, growing up, and if you could, you know, give us some of your memories so we could paint a picture for our listeners of what he was like.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you so much for that. So so he was Mommy is my son, right? So he's just a beautiful boy. I had him when I was really young, so we really grew up together. He was one of these guys that just didn't leave people behind. He was caring, kind, compassionate, extremely talented, everyone's best friend. In fact, I've never heard one person even say anything bad about him ever. And in his short 21 years, even, now I still get messages of just how he impacted someone's life. He saw the good in people. He always took the path less traveled. He was quite popular when he went off to Chicago, and, fans would be lining up waiting for his autograph, which is just absolutely amazing. And he never let that get to his head. He always had a lot of care and compassion. And in fact, there was one game that one of his fellow players messaged me shortly after Chad passed away and just said how Chad actually really saved his life. And I was really interested to hear how Chad saved this kid's life. And he said he was playing hockey on Chad's team at the Ileana Blackbirds. And the coach had told this kid that he was not going to be playing this game. And Chad could see the kid in the corner, really sad and not really sure. And so Chad just said to the coach, like, come on, like, he's got to play today, And the coach said, Chad, it's none of your business. And Chad said, well, if he's not playing, I'm not playing. And Chad actually, following his dreams, decided to take his jersey off and put it on the ground and say, like, I'm sticking up for this guy, because Chad knew he needed him. And the guy, confesses to me that he was feeling pretty darn crappy that day. And he feels that Chad, had such a big impact in his life and gave him a chance. So those are what kinds of things just warm my heart. And he was taken out of this world at 21 years old. So I was really motivated for people not to forget him and to, make his legacy continue. I was also blessed with a journal. He has a journal. And it was about a year and a half after he passed away, I started reading his journal, and I was in complete shock to some of the things that he actually was battling with when he was younger. This kid had more than enough love growing up, but he didn't have his biological father in his life. And that was a huge issue for him. I didn't know that. He didn't share that with me. And he could have any time. We had really open conversations about those things, and I knew he was battling some addictions and he was having a tough time. But I didn't know about that. So I was reading through this journal, really thinking, wow, he had a lot of pain and trauma and suffering that I didn't even know about. And I would say that probably 99.9% of people wouldn't have known that about him when you looked at him. He's 6'1", fun, energetic. He lit up the room when he walked in, those kinds of things. And yet he also had this other thing going on at the same time. So, since then, 5 years later, I have had a couple of his friends confide in me and with that they have similar issues growing up, maybe identity issues, those kinds of things. And I really didn't know. And it just shows that, everyone has a story. So he's just a beautiful boy, a smile, $1 million smile. And he was my son, and I had him when I was 15 years old, and I loved him to pieces. And it was the most difficult thing as they prepped me for 11 days to take him off life support. Mm. It was the hardest thing.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, Chad was tall, good looking, and talented, everything that George and I are not. So we're already.
Yeah, and he was a charmer. I think you guys are charmers. So
okay, well, we got that going for us, George.
Bob, he'd been more like Billy, would have played tennis. I played hockey. But I'm curious. Now I got Bill mad at me.
That's okay. Always mad at you.
Yeah, if we could go back a little bit here. Obviously, he started playing hockey when he was really young, and you had to be really young, too, raising him. Were you a Christian then, and did he go to church with you? How was he growing up?
Yeah, so he was a great kid growing up, always had really a heart of gold. Now, no, I wasn't a Christian. I would believe in God, but I didn't really know what that even really meant. We're just good people,
Mm-hmm.
And when he, in his journal, he references some things to being really blessed and loved and hope and a lot of things that are very spiritual. He also had a Bible. But as far as growing up in a Christian home, no, we did not have a Christian home. And in fact, it wasn't until I got to the hospital on November the 20th, the day after I got the phone call, by the time I got there, is when they took me to the chapel and they told me I needed to pray. And I said, I've never prayed before. How do I pray? So now I'm like 30. How old would I have been then? You know, 37-ish. And there's the first time I'm sitting there praying. First time in my life.
Wow.
First time
and
in my life.
You're praying a pretty desperate prayer for your first prayer.
So I'm praying, you know, there was a beautiful chapel there and the spiritual care workers would take me. That's the only time I would leave his side, and they would take me and they would say, okay, like we're going to take you to the chapel. You have to leave for like half an hour and we're going to take you to the chapel and you can pray. And so I would just, for the first 4 days, I just sat there and I just prayed for like a miracle. Like he was on life support. I knew because I worked at a hospital. So I had a pretty good idea what we were up against. He was on dialysis because he had laid on his arm for so long. You know, he had catheters and machines all over him. And so I would just pray for some sort of miracle every day. And honestly, every day there'd be some sort of miracle that would happen. There was these little miracles that would happen. And after the fifth day, I looked at him and he was looking tired. He looked like he was starting to be tired. And I just said to them, like, what am I praying for? Like, if you want to take me to the chapel, what am I praying for? And they said, you have to pray to be Miller Strong. And I said, what are you talking about? Because Miller Strong was trending already on social media. My cousins from Canada had got it going, and people from all over the world that knew Chad were just, you know, hashtagging Miller Strong, you know, giving him inspiration. But inside of this hospital room, we are praying for me to be strong for the, you know, the things that need to happen in the next couple of days. So it was over Thanksgiving weekend in the United States. So it's a big, you know, Thanksgiving is a big, huge deal in the United States compared to, let's say, here. And then every day they would take me to the chapel. I would pray to God, please, God, make me have strength to be able to make these decisions today. And then, you know, I had the strength to do them. I really just stood up one day in the room and I just said to everyone, like, I am pretending I'm not his mom right now. And I'm pretending that I'm the one laying here and he's the one here and he's making decisions for me. So that way I could never regret it, because I knew I was going to have to make some really, really tough decisions. So that's what I did. I just decided that I didn't have a choice, right? I didn't have a choice. So I started praying. And I got through it. But the day he died is the last day I prayed. I didn't pray after that because I was so mad at God.
Sounds like a pretty logical thought to be having.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to take a very short break. We hate to do this, but it is will be short. Aaron Miller is our guest. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill and George. We'll take a very short break. We'll be right back. Show. So glad, George, we've got a chance.
That was a short break, Bill.
It was very short. Nice to have Aaron on the show, and it's heart-wrenching to hear how difficult it is to get a phone call that your beloved son is in ICU on life support, and 11 days later he passes. And it would be pretty normal if you plead out to God and say, God, would you help us, and would you have a miracle happen? And then when that miracle doesn't happen the way you had hoped and prayed for, does it seem natural, George, that you might be mad at God?
Oh, absolutely. What's interesting to me with the opioids, the heroin, the oxy, is when we were growing up, Bill, half a century ago, heroin was the last drug anybody did, okay? And now it's a gateway drug that people are using, opioids, maybe their first drug. And it's not just people that are total addicts and out on the street. It's normal that you would think normal people that it's a recreational drug. This guy's a junior hockey player. He's in Chicago.
He's a strapping athlete, George.
Yeah, those guys don't do heroin.
Right.
Well, now that everybody does, and what she talked about at the beginning of the show is she was told by a police officer, I believe, that 5 years later, a lot of people will be doing this. Good call. Early. And, Bill, we see it with the guys we work with. They come from all walks of life, mm-hmm. Christians, non-Christians, people with a lot of money, people that don't have any money. This is everyone. And we've stopped being surprised at the people that are heroin addicts or opioid addicts, the overdoses. We lost a guy we had worked with 3 weeks ago who had, I think, 8 years of sobriety at one point.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a battle. It's a war. And as we get older in our Christianity, too, we see that the Bible's right, that things have picked up pace, and that it's colder and harder. The guys we work with are a lot more needy than they used to be.
Yeah, I agree. So, Aaron, the 11 days, which must have been so surreal for you to be in Chicago for 11 days monitoring Chad's existence during those days, praying for miracles, and then it not really coming about how you had hoped, and then losing your son. So obviously mad at God, and I don't think anybody blames you.
Hmm.
You know, I was just mad at the whole situation. I, you know, was mad at myself. I thought that, you know, what did I do wrong here? Where did I go wrong in this whole situation? You know, and then you started doubting yourself, you know, like, oh, well, maybe he didn't have such a good life. You know, maybe I should have done this. Maybe I should have done that. And, you know, so I battled really hard. I ended up getting post-traumatic stress syndrome. I was the executive director of a hospital foundation, and so I was getting triggered nonstop working in a hospital environment. And I could just kind of see this whole world falling apart in front of me and everybody in it, because I started listening to people. And I could just see, like, we're just failing everybody. I just could see we're failing everybody. And I was getting failed. Chad got failed. You know, I just was feeling just very – and I wasn't winning. I just wasn't winning. I everything I kept on doing – despite everything I was doing, everything. And I mean, I went to like EMDR, CBT, DBT, like all of a sudden I was doing all these things to try to get myself better. And I was taking everyone's suggestions. Aaron, you should do this. Aaron, you should do this. And then Nathan Westlake from one of the local churches sat me down and said, you know, Aaron, you know, this is all I really can offer you is faith. And I was still really, really mad then. And I was like, no, not going to even go there. You know, I was just like, I just can't understand how, like, what this bigger purpose is that they talk about. Like, why wouldn't you take me? I mean, my son's girlfriend was pregnant at the time he passed away. And so that means that he had a child that he doesn't even get to meet, you know? So I was just like, and then, it was finally around 2 years after I started kind of paying attention on purpose to some things. And it was actually my, a friend of mine, her daughter's been murdered in my city for 10 years with no suspects. No, I think there's suspects, but no justice. And so then I went to the mom on the days that I couldn't do this anymore, or thought I couldn't do this. She was like my person. So this is, I'd go to her and be like, well, I know everything that happened to Chad and I hate it. But like, what about losing your child and not knowing where they are? You know? And so I said, I'm, you know, all these signs are coming up to me all the time. She goes, pay attention to those things. And so I started paying attention to them. And probably the most pivotal point is when I was walking down the hallway and Ben Mandel, a good friend of mine, he's a minister from a Hutterite colony. He walked right by me and he didn't recognize me. And I said, Ben. And he goes, Aaron? And I'm like, I know, I don't even recognize myself. I feel like I've died. I feel like I'm walking around like a dead person. And he brought me out to the colony and we had talked a lot. And he said, do you think maybe it's time for you to pray again? Like, he was just really, really awesome about it. You know, he never talked about religion or anything. Any time until then, it was the right time. And I said, I think I'm going to have to. And I went home. I took Chad's journal. I had a note to God, to my family. And I'm like, I took my dog with me. And I was like, if there is a bigger purpose for Chad. God, you have to tell me what it is because I can't figure it out. I cannot figure this out. Despite everything that is happening, I can't figure out what the bigger purpose is. And I'm dying. I'm done. I've gained 80 pounds. I'm on a pill pack. I'm done. I'm done. And literally within a couple minutes. Oh, and then my note also said to my family, like, I'm taking a fall for yet a bigger purpose because I don't know what else I'm supposed to do, but I'm dying. I'm dying inside. And then literally within 2 minutes, I just got up and I went halfway up the stairs. I'm like, I'm selling my house. I'm quitting my job. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And my life started spinning out of control in a positive way, following my destiny to change the world one person at a time, to be his voice and a whole bunch of other things. And which has led me to today writing a book, which will be launched soon, starting a foundation in memory of him called Miller Strong 17 Foundation, producing songs from his journal, being a scuba diver in memory of my friend that also passed away. So lots of God moments, unbelievably God moments over and over again. So I've been blessed in a million ways.
Unbelievable, Bill. It is, and it's amazing how God meets us where we are, and things can change very quickly.
Yeah, the moment of clarity, I don't know if clarity is the right word, Aaron, but you are now in a time of prayer where you move and get in a place where you can hear God's voice. It sounds like that's what you did, and all of a sudden, in the matter of 5 minutes or so, you hear God's voice, and you're calling your realtor.
Yep. I had been to her, I'd been to see her 5 times before that. In the last 2 years, I couldn't even go to my house anymore.
Wow.
My daughter had went off to university. I was already divorced from my husband. Chad had died. You know, this was a family home at one time, you know, booming, lots of kids, lots of fun, right?
And all lots of life.
Sudden, I'm standing there by myself, and I'm like, I can't even come here anymore. So, it was a miracle, and I have, you know, and ever since then, I just pray every day. And I've been really, really blessed in a million ways. And I've had a lot of struggles also since then. So, you know, I started a foundation in memory of him called Miller Strong 17 Foundation. It's a trust. So we actually know that we're going to be able to change things that need to happen because we know what needs to happen in a lot of cases. And we also need the money to support it. So, you know, I was blessed with so much wisdom. I've been blessed with so much wisdom and insight and vision and favor that this is where I am today. But I knew God was working with me in so many ways. Like I went to Hillsong Church and before I decided I was going to do all this, I mean, I just had to pull the trigger, right? And I said to my friend Lori that I was with, we were off celebrating our kids. So Amber McFarland murdered for 10 years. Chad Miller died 5 years before of a heroin drug overdose. These two moms. Taking charge and changing the world. And so we went down to San Francisco just to celebrate our kids. We knew our lives were never going to be the same. And we met Brian Nelson on a plane. He's a pastor in Silicon Valley. That day he prayed to meet new friends. And I sit down beside him and he says to me, he's really interested in my story. And I say to him, I'm so tired though, because I've been like so busy. I'm just going to lay down. I'm just going to sit down for a minute and sleep. He goes, can I pray for you? And I said to him, I would love it if you pray for me because I'm already on this spiritual journey, right? But a lot of people around me aren't really getting it. You know, they're not really just not getting it because things are happening like beautifully for me and things, I'm looking better. I'm feeling better. It's amazing. And so he says he's going to pray for me. I'm like, oh, thank you so much. I wake up and I said to him, I feel like I've slept for like 5 years. your prayers have worked because, you know, for 2 years, I never slept. Well, I mean, I must have slept at some point, but I mean, I closed my eyes and all I have are these visions of him dying in my arms and, you know, picking out his tie for his funeral and just crap, you know? And so, Brian told, we wanted to go to a church service. So Brian told us to go to Hillsong Church in San Francisco. So we went and I showed up there and I said to Lori, I'm testing God. I am 99.99% in, but if we are going for this, we're going to get kicked around, Lori. I know we are. It's just the way it is. I want to make sure God really wants us to do this, like really, really wants us to do this because I'm pretty sure, but I want to just make sure. So I left my WestJet MasterCard sitting at the coffee station. I have $45,000 in my bank account. I don't have a job and I have a $45,000 limit on my credit card. And I just left it there. And I said to Lori, if this comes back to me by the end of the service, it means that God is ready for us. Like, this is what we're supposed to be doing. And if it doesn't, then I think we're just going to have to wait a little bit longer. You know, I'm almost kind of chickening out a little bit of, you know. And so I watch the service. I go off to the side. I watch, and Brandon is saying, you know, you have labels on you like grief, and you're an addict, and you're a loser, and you're, you know, all these things that just, you're buried, right? And then it's like, what if you just talk about being having joy? Because, you know, if we just have a little bit of joy in our life, or we have hope, and we have freedom, and we have, and all of a sudden I was like, I'm doing it. I think I'm going to do it. And I sat back down, and the guy comes up to me. He's like, are you Aaron Miller? Granted, like, there's 5,000 people in this church, okay? This is not like 20 people. There's 5,000 people in this church. And he says to me, are you Aaron Miller? And I said, yes. And he said, here's your MasterCard back. We found it at the coffee station. And literally my life exploded yet again to the next level. and you know, we just keep on getting blessed and blessed every day. So we are really, really fortunate. So when we got back, we had a lot of work to do for October 18th, which was the launch day. And what happened to me the next day is what's blowing people's minds, is that I got a phone call saying that I had to go and see a psychiatrist because they thought I was crazy. They thought I had grandiose thinking, for thinking I could change the world one person at a time. Now, my background of my career is that I was an executive director of a hospital foundation, so I knew exactly what I needed to do to create a trust that actually was going to be more effective than what I had been previously doing. And so I was already trusting God 100%. So I'm like, okay, God, well, what's this all about? So I go, and as I walk in, I see the pastor, Nathan Westlake, standing there. And I'm like, okay, God, thank you. That's a good sign. That's a good sign that somebody's here for me. And I walked in, and sure enough, they had me form board under the Mental Health Act in Canada, which means that you are detained and taken into custody and locked up in a room for 72 hours. And that was for having grandiose thinking I could change the world one person at a time, and that I had Brian there giving blessing. And so I was like, oh my gosh. So my friends were like, oh my God, Aaron, I can't believe it. You're getting arrested. Like, we never thought you would get arrested this way. You know, because I'm 42 years old. A lot of my friends have done kind of crazy things in their past or whatever. But I mean, I was a mom at 15, so I have a lot of innocence to me. And so basically, yeah, I was taken, the police officer comes in. And the police officer's name is Chad. And I go into room 17 and I'm like, okay, God, like, what's the bigger purpose now? And so I think the bigger purpose for that was that that's where my story became a book. And now I'm writing a book. So,
wow. You know, it's, I love the credit card story. George left his credit card here in the studio once, and I ended up buying a big flat screen TV with it. Remember that, George?
I do. You know, it's Thank a good thing I don't bill. Live in Canada. I'd get arrested a lot. Yeah.
You and your grandiose ideas.
Absolutely.
You got nothing but grandiose ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, let's take a little break. You're listening to Road Recovery, Bill and George. We're going to take a very short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening tonight. If you are just joining us, we're talking to Aaron Miller. She lives in Winnipeg, and sadly, Aaron lost her son, Chad, at age 21 to a heroin overdose. You know, God has laid an incredible mission on her heart to change the world, you know, one person at a time. And, you know, if you change the life of one person, you're changing the world because, you know, George, you and I have worked in recovery, and I would say, boy, in the last 10 years, we've seen 20 or 30 guys that we've worked with die from overdose.
Oh, easily.
And if someone like Aaron would have stepped in and somehow intervened in the life of one of these men or women and saved their life, helped save their life.
Yeah, I think one
changing the world.
Yeah, I think one of the important things here with her story and her ministry, Bill, is people never think that it's going to be them, that they're going to be the one. The guys we worked with that OD'd and didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them had sobriety, and it was, well, I'll go back one last time. And, of course, with heroin, you have that reverse tolerance that what you used the last time to get high, now it will kill you.
Right.
And I think we need people like Aaron out there saying, this is the truth. This is what happens. This was an athlete. This was a great hockey player playing juniors. This wasn't on his radar.
No.
This wasn't intentional. And people need to know that we really underestimate the damage that's out there, the potential.
Yeah. Aaron, what do you see in your community among Chad's friends or Chad's peers in terms of opioid use? And has there been any other deaths that you've heard of since Chad?
Yeah, there has been. There has been a few. The crisis everywhere I go in this entire world, we're in a complete crisis, a complete epidemic. And every single person I've interviewed, and I have interviewed thousands of people, because I was trying to figure out what addiction is, because I don't have it. For the grace of God, I didn't get it. I don't have it. And that is the grace of God that I didn't have it. Because many times in my life, my trauma of being raped when I was 14 years old, being a single parent when I was 15, being homeless, being poor, being judged, being all losing your child, a whole bunch of things. I could have been that person very easily, because I understand why people turn to drugs in a lot of cases, or maybe even all cases. I don't know that for sure, but
self-medication.
It's the pain, it's the suffering. And then, you know, for Chad's situation, he had pain and suffering. He was doing awesome. He separated his shoulder. He was given Vicodin as a pain medication. He got addicted to the Vicodin. 18 months later, he dies of a heroin drug overdose. I don't blame the people that gave him the Vicodin, but my question is when somebody separates their shoulder, should they be given Vicodin as a pain medication? So what I did is I went around and interviewed many, many people, and not one person I talked to ever wanted to be an addict. Nobody in their family ever wanted them to be an addict, and everyone has a story how they got there. Every single one of us has a story how we got where we are, right? And so I have a lot of empathy and a lot of love and a lot of compassion and a lot of insight and wisdom and courage and motivation. I never want to be sitting with one of my friends or anybody, and as they're writing the obituary to their son's funeral.
Yeah. So
if I can help one person do that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sharing this story.
Yeah, I want to ask Dr. Fraser here, what do you think about the Vicodin prescription for a separated shoulder? A little harsh? A little much? And then I wonder how much Chad got. How many pills were in the prescription bottle?
I think, to comment on a particular situation, let me go general.
Okay.
I think one of the problems that we can get into is how an individual will react to it, okay? I could go in for, I'm chemically dependent in recovery, and I could go in for, well, I've had some opioids for operations, Bill. The problem is it can light the scoreboard up in your head, and what was intended to alleviate pain and suffering can light up a scoreboard in your head where you want to do more of that and change a little brain chemistry, and it seems harmless at the time. And I think one of the things she's doing with his story is letting people know how dangerous these are. That, a doctor might go, well, I'm not going to give you enough to get addicted on, but that feeling starts, and then you want to go out and get more, and you can get it on the street. I think that's what the danger is. The opioids, the OxyContin was made to solve pain for people that had cancer and all that. And the problem is it did that, but there were also a lot of people that were prescribed it that got addicted to it, that this is their new life.
Mm-hmm.
And the drug works so well, that's what happened. So I don't think there's harmful intent, obviously, but we didn't know enough about a lot of these drugs at the time. And I'm sure a Vicodin for pain would be a very legitimate deal. I'm not a doctor, so I can't say that. It's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But it can light the scoreboard. And I know I had a heart thing. I told you about that this year, and they gave me something, and I had to call my sponsor and go, I haven't felt that good in 30 years, man. It lights your scoreboard.
Right.
And you're off. Yeah.
Yeah, that is exactly it. You're nailing it right on this. Like, I'm not mad that he got that. What we are given to do things, we do, right? And so
it's just
awareness to, you know, and the reference in my book about when I got mentally ill, I was on a pill pack. I had 12 medications. I was on 12 medications. I was getting all the side effects from them. I didn't get addicted to them. If God didn't tell me to quit my job and throw those darn medications in the garbage, like God told me to do that, and that's what I did, you know. And so, I'm not a professional of anything. I just know about my own story, and I think that Chad liked the feeling of being on Vicodin. I didn't even know. It was his billet mom actually that called me a couple weeks after and said, you know, this is not good. We're in a crisis in Chicago right now, and he was given Vicodin, and then brought him home and told them that it's not your fault and on and on, and then he got himself into some trouble the next year with the law trying to buy heroin, and by this time I'm just like out of the loop of what's happening, right? And so it just spiraled into today, talking to you guys, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah.
That you can talk to us and share the new hope you have to help others. That's what is awesome. The sadness of losing, yeah, Chad is just, it just takes my breath away, Aaron, and I am so, so sorry. And the fact that God does have a plan, a purpose that you are acting on is wonderful. Because, again, if I go back to that horrible night in November where you get a phone call, I can't imagine what that is like. I simply cannot imagine how your stomach must flip-flop and never come back.
Yeah. And this is the thing, I never want anyone to ever get that same phone call.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not the reality,
right?
But, I was on a podcast yesterday and they were telling me 5 people in the United States every day are dying of a heroin drug overdose. So if we all say we can't, or not heroin, sorry, just drug overdose. But if we all say there's nothing we can do about it, it means nothing will happen. So, I've been sharing the story and getting my voice heard about all sorts of things. And I'm just following my destiny. And there was no way at 21 years old I was just going to let him be a statistic.
Yeah, I love it.
And I think it's great, too. You're following what you believe is God's call on your life. Bill, we hear the story so people will hear it. And we never know. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing from the Word of God, Bill, that maybe somebody hears this and it goes, you know what? I don't want that to happen to me. Or I'm going down a road here. You know, this guy was a young hockey player. What am I doing? Because I'm sure he didn't think this would happen. You know, this wasn't what he wanted. And we get deluded. And so one of the reasons it's important to hear your story, and it's so powerful for Bill and I, are like sad here, stunned.
Yeah, very sad.
It is the reality of what happens, and we need to break through that what I think is going to happen is a lot of times different than the reality, because we minimize it, we justify it, we rationalize it, but the reality is if you do these drugs, you will become addicted, and if you do them long enough, you're going to have to go to the street to get it because the prescription runs out, and then you don't know what you're getting, and if there's fentanyl or something in it, you die. And
exactly,
it happens every day to great people, all walks of life, rich people, poor people, Christian people, non-believers. It happens, and it's awful. And to hear it, somebody hearing this, you might save their life. So I really credit you for what you're doing. And I'm so sorry about what got you here.
Thank you.
That is truly, truly sad.
Exceptionally wise wisdom from you, George.
Off day for me.
It's got to be an off day because I don't normally get that kind of wisdom from you. But I appreciate it.
Off night, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're right. Aaron, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing your story about your beautiful son, Chad.
Thank you.
We just have digital arms around you right now. Thank you for having the courage to follow what God has asked you to do and sharing your story. And I think it's a big heads-up warning to everybody. There's people tonight listening to the show that maybe have some surgery scheduled next week that might get some Vicodin. Beware. Connect with the people that you are close to and make sure that there's a lot of accountability and make sure it's you're doing the next right thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. That wraps up this award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Thanks so much for listening. If you missed any of this, go to myfaithradio.com. You can check out the Real Recovery show page, and you can pass this on to a friend if you would like to do so. Thanks so much for listening tonight. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.